Hi, this is Barbara Eden. I play Jeannie in I Dream of Jeannie. And you are listening to Talk Sci-Fi.
Hi, this is Jerry Donaldson.
And Eugenia Stapira.
And you're listening to Talk Sci-Fi.
Jerry, we've got an exciting interview coming up.
Well, this is our first podcast with Gawler Community Broadcasting Association.
Mm-hmm.
So we thought we'd start off with something special.
That's for sure. There's not many people that have a Star Trek captain as one of their interviewees.
And not one of their first podcasts. We do another podcast, and this is our second podcast, a shortened version of it. And we thought we'd show off a little bit.
That's for sure.
The format of the show is that we'll talk for 5 or 10 minutes at the very most, and then we'll do one of the interviews I hope you'll enjoy.
I'm sure you will enjoy, especially if you enjoy the world of sci-fi and fantasy.
Well, the fact that we're called Talk Sci-Fi, I think should give a good indication of what kind of area this podcast is actually heading off into.
That's right. Jerry and I have been involved in the world of sci-fi for a long time. I've probably started at the age of about 6.
Yes, and I'm trying to think back. I think it was 5 when I saw my first show, and I'm not going to say which one it was because I'll give my age away terribly a lot. Now, we've been around sci-fi for a long time, and we both thoroughly enjoy the genre in its many forms. Well, I like audio and visual. And Eugenia is probably more the visual girl.
Yes, the visual and sometimes the behind-the-scenes stuff I really enjoy. So with what we've been doing, we've had the opportunity to talk to many people about the behind-the-scenes and the front of camera and the in-between.
Absolutely. And we're now going to talk about what we're going to talk about.
That's right.
And that is?
We've interviewed Avery Brooks.
But firstly, we'll talk a little bit about Star Trek.
Mm-hmm.
And particularly, obviously, since he's the captain of Deep Space Nine, it's probably a good idea to mention that particular series.
Yes, the third in the franchise, if you don't count the cartoon.
Well, that's still the original, isn't it?
Yeah, the original, and then there's Next Gen, and then Deep Space Nine began. And it was a little bit different because it wasn't particularly on a spaceship. That came a little bit later when they had the Defiant. But it was set, and it was written differently too, wasn't it, Jerry?
It was. The other one was a mission of a show a week. Something different happened every week. But with Deep Space Nine, it was much more of an ongoing arc. And an arc started right from the first episode until the end of 7 years later, when it finally accumulated into that final of what happened to Brooks.
Yes.
At the end of it as his character, Sisko.
And that was something that Star Trek... It was new to Star Trek.
Yeah, it was. A lot of people didn't like that.
No, because it meant that you had to watch each week.
I know.
Whereas before, you could pop in and out of episodes and still understand what was going on.
And I suppose also it was that the old series, the original, started off as the wagon train to the stars. If you know anything about sci-fi, you've heard that phrase a million times, where that was very much not a wagon train. It was a city. And it was a city that was run by Starfleet, basically.
And the difference with this particular show was that it had your main cast, but it had such a huge range of B-class actors who had
good actors.
Well, sorry.
B-class characters.
Big B-line characters that were extremely important to the show. So you could actually say that they had a main cast of about 20 people.
Well, yes, you've got characters like the Ferengi and the Cardassians who are actually always there, where there were very much protagonists in the original series and the Next Generation. Well, there was even a Klingon DS9 as one of the officers, as there was in TNG. But you know what I mean in terms of the original series protagonists, and now they're actually just part of the community.
Yes, yes. And even someone like Morn, who never spoke one single word during any episode that he was in, was still very important.
Had to pay him ongoing rates? So because he didn't speak, did he get paid less than the others?
I have heard from what he has said from interviews that if he had actually spoken, they would have had to pay him more.
But it was interesting. I mean, I wonder how many seats he sat on.
Lots.
Along the way. But if we talk about Sisko, what did you think of Sisko's character?
I didn't mind it because he was the first one that portrayed a family man because he had his son on the space center as well. And he was different in, I think, because of that. He was a much gentler character to begin with, but still very much a commander. And first black captain in Star Trek. So there were lots of firsts for him.
There were. I mean, it was a completely different series. And you have to say that when there's multiple of them.
Franchise.
That's it. That's the word I'm looking for. I mean, I think the franchise took a risk in having it on a space station in the middle and starting it when TNG was actually still on air.
Which was, yeah, very different. I mean, you didn't have too many places that's, or even series that started a spin-off while the original was still going on. So Star Trek did it, not Star Trek, Stargate did it later.
Yes.
But
Stargate did it, if we have to say, did a lot of what Star Trek did before. I mean, they followed it. Even the Lost in Space ship was really a Voyager. You know that?
Yes.
So it was on the same kind of thing as we go through, but there were bits of Star Trek DS9 that really annoyed me.
Which was what?
One, I think it was a 5-7 year story arc. Two, the Bajorans annoyed me at times. The actual Bajorans themselves. I really liked the Cardassians because we saw a different side of them and that kind of thing. I always thought the Bajorans were sort of wishy-washy kind of a race.
Well, they were the downtrodden race. I mean, they'd been oppressed by the Cardassians and basically a peace-loving community that was suddenly had to go into a fighting mode. So it had a lot of history.
It had. It probably had more backstory than any of the other episodes.
That's true.
Regardless, even Voyager, it had a lot more backstory than Voyager. Voyager only had TNG and, do you know what I mean? The backstory that they already had were because of the Cardassians and the Bajorans and the Ferengi and all of that. There were lots of backstories.
Well, I think we found out a lot more of the cultures from
the different ones.
Of the different ones from DS9 than we did from any of the others. And that was very interesting. And, you know, even things like Odo and the Founders and his backstory, you know, that took 7 years to come about.
I don't think they used him as well as they could have.
What, he needed to do more shapeshifting?
Yeah, I think he should have done more shapeshifting. I mean, he could fly like a bird. He could do a whole pile of things. And they didn't use him. He stayed in his, which was cheaper, obviously, to do.
I think so.
In his solid form as opposed to his, and I think they could have done more than that. But we have to say René Auberjonois was not a young man either, though.
No, no. But what I loved about Deep Space Nine, I think, is the humour that it had, especially with the Ferengi.
Oh, some of the best episodes of all the Star Trek are the Ferengi episodes. I mean,
definitely.
Little Green Men and the Magnificent Ferengi. I mean, just to name two of them, were just brilliant.
They were. And when they introduced Brunt and, you know, the Grand Nagus and all the other bits and pieces.
And Mum.
And Mum, Moogie.
Moogie.
That was really lovely. And I, you know, you sort of almost had laugh out loud.
Oh, yes.
Situations with those. And whenever you think of the Ferengi, you do think of them in a very comical, lighthearted way.
As opposed to the TNG episode, which definitely. They were really not very nice.
Oh, they were horrible.
Yes. So you have to go back and look at them in the Next Generation. And there's behind that makeup, there's some interesting people along the way. Like, I mean, Wayoon, in fact, was a Ferengi.
Yes.
Underneath the makeup. You know, that kind of thing. Brunt was a Ferengi. It was a Wayoon. It's quite complicated.
Well, they were played by the same person.
That's right.
I think that's what Jerry's
that's
trying
what I'm
to
actually
say.
So in that episode, you had one character or one actor playing multiple characters.
Yes, and even over
and that happened
time,
more.
Yes, we had Ethan Phillips, who played Neelix in Voyager, was one of the original Ferengis in Next Generation. You had Armin Shimman, who played an original Ferengi in Next Gen, but very different character to his Quark character when he was in Deep Space Nine.
So maybe it was just these particular stereotypical shaped people that fit the mode of Ferengi.
Well, Ferengi had to be short. So they got all the short actors.
And we are going to talk in our interview with two of those short actors.
Later on, yes,
day. So that will be quite exciting. So you have to keep listening to make sure that you keep in with those two of those shorter. And just a little teaser, they're a father and son.
Yes.
Not in real life,
but in the show. So if you have a good knowledge of Deep Space Nine,
or
you probably already know who they are.
Well, But if not, you'll get to know a lot more by talking to them or listening to them.
But if you haven't watched Deep Space Nine and you do like sci-fi, I don't know why you wouldn't have watched Star Trek and Deep Space Nine, but it is worthwhile taking a look at it. I did find the first season very hard to begin with, but once I got into it, I was quite happy to move along with the story. But I know, remembering when it first aired, the first season was a hard slog.
I don't know if it was, for me anyway, so much a hard slog as opposed to a hard watch,
mm-hmm.
in terms of it was in one separate place. There was a lot of backstory to establish. There was so many alien races, like the prophets who were aliens, to Odo, to the Ferengi, to the Cardassians, it was a lot to take in.
Mm-hmm.
We're on the Next Generation ship. There was the same people every week. So it was a completely different way of looking at the Star Trek.
It was. And, you know, one thing I regret is that the Star Trek experience has gone from Vegas, because when they had done the promenade, just as if it was on the set, Quark's Bar, and you had Ferengi walking around talking to you just as Ferengi did on the show, that was really a great experience. But it's gone.
It may come back someday.
It may. I mean, hopefully it does.
And there's been rumours that there are world tours of stuff happening, possibly maybe in the future, who knows, of experiences like that where they'll come from country to country. There was supposed to be one in one of the Middle Eastern countries where they took it
over.
I
think somewhere in Dubai there's supposed to be a Star Trek experience starting.
But it's a long way to go. It is a long way to go.
It is a long way to go.
And they were talking about building something there and then taking that around the world. Whether that's happened or not, who knows.
Do you think Star Trek will die eventually? Or will it just live on forever, it will continue in some way or some form?
I think the ideal of Star Trek will continue until we can do it ourselves, mm-hmm. or we're close. Because I think it is probably one of the very few shows that has inspired many people to actually do things.
Oh, definitely.
And whether that's in engineering or medicine or
astronomy,
physics, you know, I was going to say astrology there, but I'd get smacked for that, wouldn't I, really? But astrophysics mm-hmm. is probably what I was coming along. And there are many scientists who actually say they did it because. And astronauts, some people wanted to get into space. I mean, and we had that recent one where one of the astronauts actually wore a Star Trek uniform in space.
Mm-hmm.
And that was quite, you know, that obviously she was inspired by Star Trek to try to get there, and she brought a uniform with her to do it. So it is probably, until we really can do it, yes, I think there'll be a form of something around.
Mm-hmm.
And on that note, should we let them listen to the Avery Brooks?
I think so. We have to say that Avery Brooks is an unusual character.
He's an interesting man.
He is a very interesting man.
He's a professor of entertainment arts
mm-hmm.
at Rutgers University. He's a tenured professor, which means he's been given the okay to be there for the rest of his life, or as long as he wants to be. So he's been in that. He's a jazz pianist and singer. He's got a very good voice.
He has.
Very good.
And that's probably what we talk about more with the interview rather than Star Trek questions. Because I think, you know, when you've been in that show a long time ago, that sometimes you just don't want to talk about things.
Well, that's
like
right.
That
and we're interested in the people. We're not necessarily always interested in the show. We've watched the show.
Mm.
We know about the show. We can talk about the show. We're doing it right now. And we like to know what the people, the actors themselves are like. And that's probably a flavour of our interviews that you'll listen to.
That's right. So if you're wanting to listen to our interviews to find out more about the show, you'll probably be disappointed.
Yes.
But if you want to listen to interviews to learn more about the person who is behind the character in the show, then we're the podcast for you.
Absolutely. And one of two, which if you keep listening to the end, you'll find out. We do your second podcast. Slightly longer and more in depth, all those kind of things. And you can find the address further on at the end of this podcast. But for now, we'll just head over to Avery Brooks.
No, Avery, welcome back to Australia.
Thank you.
It's been quite a while since you've been here last.
4 years. Four long years.
And I believe this one's just a whirlwind visit.
Yeah. I mean, you know, often, you know, coming to this side of the world without an extended possibility is whirlwind.
That's for sure.
Yeah.
Now, since we last saw you, you've now put out an album.
I have.
Would you like to tell us a little bit about what type of music you'll find on your album?
You know, I asked this young man earlier today about what, how many musics there are in the world. And he answered, there's one, and I agree. So that perhaps there are two. There's great music, and there's not so great.
So you're into great music.
That's it. That's exactly right. That's what it is.
And was this a labor of love, just to...
Yeah, that's right. You know, I mean, I put it off. I didn't really put it off. It took so long to do, essentially because I did it by myself. So, you know, I produced it, I paid for it, everything. So this is really a long due, overdue homage to great male singers. You know, starting with my father.
Right.
And then, and of course, not all of them, but, you know, Nat King Cole, Billy Eckstein, Johnny Hunt, Brooke Benton, Arthur Prison.
No Robeson?
Well, Robeson, too. I mean, you have to be in there. Robeson, you have to say. But, I mean, that's what it really is. And in combination, it is, of course, it's ballads and love songs. And it talks about, through these great compositions, the consequence of loving and living, or living and loving, for that matter. So that it is, it's spoken word, integrated in between, you know, the music, and also sometimes with the music, and then is the poetry. They call it spoken word. I don't know where that came from, but it's poetry. You know, it's Rumi, the great Sufi poet, and Henry Dumas,
mm-hmm.
you know, one of the greatest poets in the latter half of the 20th century. That's what it is.
Music, your first love?
I mean, if I had to put it in order, how many loves are there in the world?
Well, there are a lot.
You see what I'm talking about?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
I mean, if you love, how many times can you love but once? If you love, I'm not trying to be flippant about it, but it seems to me that if you love, if you have the capacity to love, that's the only one. That's what I'm trying to say. So, you know, I couldn't say first love.
Your first passion?
See, there we go again. You know what I mean? Because
I'm not going to ask anymore.
If you create this hierarchy, this vertical thing, that depending on who's listening, you see what it means? Say, wait a minute. I thought I was. You know, what musicians used to do? Perhaps they still do, but this is, you know, back in the R&B days, blues. And I probably just, this is dedicated to, well, you know who you are.
Sneaky.
Diplomatic.
Yeah. So
in the last 4 years, what have you been, apart from your album, what other things have you been involved in?
Oh, you know, I've goodness gracious.
Done some stage work?
Yeah. In fact, since I saw you last, I did Tamburlaine by Christopher Marlowe,
mm-hmm.
and we opened this is the new home of the Shakespeare Theater in Washington. It's called the Harmon Arts Center, you know, right downtown in Washington. So I did Tamburlaine. That was the first piece in this brand new theater, the State of the Art Theater. And last year, I did the American premiere of a play by a writer from England named Kwame Kwe Ama, called Let There Be Love. He is now the new artistic director of Center Stage in Baltimore. Brand new in that way, but yeah, he just became the artistic director now. But I mean, he worked there before and he's written plays and directed, but now they've named him artistic director. And then I did Death of a Salesman. 2 years ago, yeah, at Oberlin College. And, you know, I played Willie Loman.
Mm-hmm.
And My goodness.
And are you still lecturing as well?
Well, I mean, I'm still in the faculty of Rutgers University, yes, until they decide to let me go.
Of course they wouldn't want to do that.
How would I know?
We all know.
I am the... It's like reading about the cancelling of a series or knowing that a series is cancelled. You know, you might as well ask somebody on the street. Mm. You know, otherwise you have to read about it in the newspaper.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know.
Or Twitter these days.
Not I.
No, you're not a technology fan?
Oh, not at all. I have no interest. If I'm a keyboard, I'm interested in is a piano. That's mostly it. And as a matter of fact, aside from the genius of the possibility of such things as we witness in the world, you know, that the children have figured out how to communicate. And that's a wonderful thing. But for the sake of doing it, I have no interest.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, Avery, you're still quite involved in the Star Trek world with coming into conventions and that sort of thing.
Not often. I mean, it is wonderful to see you again. You see what I mean? When was that? 4 years
ago.
4 long years. You see what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So, no, I mean, it is always fascinating and rewarding, you know, to meet people like yourselves and to say thank you. But, no, I don't do them often. I'm not asked often. It used to bother me. I used to wonder why, but it no longer, I don't think about it much anymore. But
wonderful you're back here.
Hey, I'm glad to be back. Briefly.
Very briefly. So how did, just sort of for our fans who may not get a chance to see you at a convention or anything like that, being part, a lead role in, you know, an iconic show like Star Trek, how did that make you feel at that time?
Oh, I didn't contemplate it much, because at the moment one starts to think outside, then the work becomes external.
Mm-hmm.
To think about, to ponder the enormity of a thing that has been going on so long, I knew that I had to really just focus on doing the best work that I could do. So, I'm the same Avery, though older, as I was before I started.
Four long years.
But no, it's not really a reflection of Star Trek as much as it is the way my brother and I, you know, were raised. That, you know, it's more important to hold on to what you've been given, to use what you've been given, and go on.
Mm-hmm.
The least of what is important is to shout about who you are.
Mm-hmm.
The more important thing is to go forward and be the best. My father used to say, and both my parents, for that matter, in different ways, used to tell us, my brother and I have an older brother, said, we don't care what you do, but you must do something. See?
I use the same with my children.
You understand.
Mm.
Yeah.
I don't care whether you're rich or poor, but you need to do something.
Mm. Yeah. Dare to be different.
Well, you could do that too. I mean, you know, that's a, what do you call it? That's a possibility, to be different, not necessary.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep. Avery, thank you very, very much for spending this time with us.
My pleasure.
Can I just want to ask one question? One question. What was the reaction of your students at college, at the university, when you actually did your lectures on video in your Cisco uniform?
Well, you know, that has become the, you know, there one goes with that Twitter tweet.
Network. On your IMDb.
People, that's what I'm saying. You know, you see, because you can't check that stuff.
Yep.
You know, what's the reality is what we know is once you put a thing out there, it's almost impossible to erase, whether it is true or not.
That's correct.
You see what I mean? Mm-hmm. And there you have it. That's called contemporary mythology.
It's a myth.
It's a myth.
Well, no, not it's not, because you saw it on you see what I mean?
Yeah, we saw it on IMDb. Yes.
There you go. It's a myth.
Thank you very much for spending some time.
He wants to take a picture. So you might as well keep talking.
Keep talking.
Keep talking.
Let's go, baby.
Thank you, Amy.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
And it's good to see you back here.
It is.
Hey, thanks.
You've been listening to Talk Sci-Fi with Jerry Donaldson and Eugenia Stapira. If you'd like to catch us in our fuller episodes on our podcast, Women Talk Sci-Fi, you can do so at www.womentalksci-fi.com. That's www.womentalksci-fi, all one word, .com. Thank you for listening. Title music performed by Boxcat Games, called Breaking In, available at thefreemusicarchive.org under a Creative Commons license.